Raging Cajun's disappointing loss to the cream of the crop in the Sun Belt. Both my Redbirds and the Washington Nationals went on the road to advance to the National League Championship Series. The Astros are hoping to change things up and hold serve at home as the Yankees await the winner of tonight's Do or Die Game 5. He's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame of LSU. Number 11 on October 11th. Brady James will join us. Saints Jaguars preview and the Schwab predicts week 6. In other words, we're full. We're loaded. Today, Thursday, October 10th, 2019.
Bringing a fly ball to center field. Bellinger going back, way back at the wall, and it's gone. A grand slam home run for Howie Kendrick. 7-3 Nationals.
The 1-0 pitch to Fowler. He could do it. He had 19 during the regular season. Swing and a smash past third. That's going to open the bases. It could clear the bases. One run in, two run in. They're going to stop the runner at third now, and the Cardinals lead 7-0.
He's very athletic. He's mobile. I wouldn't say he's, you know, just go back and start running, but if he needs to run, if the protection breaks down or if there's an opening there, if he gets outside the pocket, he can cause a lot of damage with his speed and his ability to extend plays. But he's a very accurate quarterback and has good poise. He's shown good toughness in the pocket. He's been hit a few times, but he just stands in there and, you know, can keep ripping it. So he's been impressive.
Good afternoon. How are you? Great to be with you on this Thursday, the day after the Raging Cajuns offense somehow disappeared in a 17-7 loss, the critical moment, a 4th-and-1 from the one, and the Cajuns get stopped. App State just really, really good. They play well at home. They play well on the road. We'll hear from head coach Billy Napier in just a minute. Getting closer and closer to the big showdown Saturday night in Tiger Stadium. Nick Delator of the Gator Country will join us in this hour to talk about the matchup and get his perspective from the Florida side of things. St. Louis Cardinals scored 10 runs in the first inning. Holy cow. Never saw that one coming. And they just dismantled the Atlanta Braves to advance to the NL Championship Series. And the Dodgers, Dave Roberts got some explaining to do. He definitely did not manage that game well for the Dodgers. And the Nationals get a grand slam and win it 7-3. So it's the Redbirds' home field advantage over the wild card Washington Nationals for the right to advance and go to the World Series. Tonight is Game 5, winner take all. Astros versus the Tampa Bay Rays. All the pressure in the world on the Astros. They won more games than anybody. They've seen the Dodgers fall. So a lot of pressure on the Astros tonight. Gerrit Cole on the hill. We'll see if he can get it done for the Astros. If not, it'll be a huge disappointment for a close of a series that everyone thought was just going to be 3 and out. For the Astros to move on. So a lot of pressure there. We've got a yawner of a Thursday night football game with the Giants and the Patriots. Oh, my God. How awful is that going to be? Zion Williamson comes through again, 29 points. I don't care about the score of the game or if the Pelicans win or lose, but they did win in Chicago. He was 12 of 13 from the field. All of his shots were 3 feet and in. He just continues to drive the ball to the basket. He is a show within a show. He doesn't rush. He doesn't panic. Lets the game come to him. He is mature beyond his years. And I've said it before. I'll say it again. It's going to be a very fun team to watch. but it's going to get tougher. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. All right, back to the Raging Cajuns. Announced crowd of 21,000 last night at Cajun Field, and the head coach of the Raging Cajuns was very appreciative.
You know, there's lots of lessons to be learned tonight. I think that our football team is going to grow. There's lots of young players out there that are experiencing this type of adversity for the first time, and we're going to benefit from it. You know, as bad as it may feel at this moment, certainly for it to be a one-score game all the way down to the wire, when you don't have the type of offensive production and execution in certain critical situations that we typically have, for our defense in the kicking game to make it a game the way that they did, I'm proud of that.
All right, that's not what I was anticipating, but he was really thankful for the students that turned. Hey, look, it's tough on a Wednesday night. It's tough on a Wednesday night. Parents have kids. Kids go to school. Kids have after school activities. They've got homework. You got to put them to bed. You've got work responsibilities. You got to get up early in the morning, get them off to school. It's tough. Okay, it is very, very tough on a Wednesday night. It hasn't worked before. I don't think it's ever going to work, but you got to weigh the balances. A lot of people stay home and watch the game on TV, so you got to weigh it. For them to get what they said was 21,000, that's pretty darn good. Pretty darn good, and it bodes well. I just wonder if that was a Saturday night game, how many fans would have shown up, but Billy Napier thankful for the students that came out.
Well, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say how thankful we are as an entire football team and staff for our community showing up tonight. You know, I thought it was impressive. It was electric from the jump. And I think our football team, you could sense how much they appreciated the support, certainly for a Wednesday night game, you know, for people to show up. In those type of numbers, for our students to show up in those type of numbers, we can't thank them enough.
There you go. They didn't run the ball effectively, not nearly as they had led the country in rushing. You got to tip your hat to App State, a well-coached, well-disciplined team, and that Taylor on the defensive line was something else. Skip down. I said it earlier, the key moment of the game, the Cajuns had an opportunity. It was fourth and goal at the one-yard line, and Billy Napier discussed the play and the result.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the more, I'm going to lay in bed tonight thinking about that one for sure. But, we called the plays that we had planned and practiced. And, I think that we're going to see that we could execute those plays a little bit better, and we're going to see that maybe Appalachian State had some really good players make great plays at times. So I think it's going to be a combination of playing against a really good team and also a lack of execution and maybe communication, maybe decision making. It'll be the sum of the parts. And certainly, we're going to benefit from this. As difficult as it may be in the moment, we'll benefit from it.
All right, so we'll see how they bounce back from that Arkansas State. They've got some time before they get ready to play that one. The punter was Burns, was tremendous, knocking three of them down inside the five, including one right at like the 1-inch yard line. He was tremendous. So the coach was appreciative of the environment. The ones that showed up, good for you. Now at 4-2 overall, look, the goal is to get to where App State is. You can go on the road and win like that. Their quarterback was the difference maker, no question. He was a difference maker for LSU. He's going into the LSU Hall of Fame this Friday. Brady James joins us next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, tomorrow, Friday, October the 11th, the 2019 LSU Athletics Hall of Fame induction class will be formally enshrined at the Louisiana State Museum in downtown Baton Rouge. And one of the inductees to be is joining us now. And he was one of the all-time greats. He wore number 11, kind of fitting. Number 11 gets inducted on October the 11th. And that's LSU football All-American Brady James, who's kind enough to join us today. Brady, from all of us to you and your family and friends, congratulations, a well-deserved honor. How are you feeling on this eve of your induction?
I think things are starting to sit in. I am here in Baton Rouge, and when you get here, I don't live in Baton Rouge. I don't live in Louisiana. I live in Dallas. And yeah. I'm always reminded of the nostalgia, like the smells. This morning it rained. We had a shower, then the sun came out. And it rained again, and the sun came out again. I mean, there's only one place that this happens, you know? It's right here. And it makes you reminisce when driving around campus and different places and how this place has grown and all those different meetings and all the times that I didn't think I would make it, and here I am.
Here you are. You were – first love was basketball. You played in the band, but eventually the right decision was made. Talk about that decision to finally play football on a full-time basis.
I think – well, I like to say it worked out.
Yes.
That decision – I wasn't fond of football like that. You know, even though we were aggressive and we played in the neighborhood, it was just something that we all did. Like for me, all my buddies, and I have to talk about my family. So I am the baby of the group. I have two older brothers and an older sister. And it took me all the way till I was about 19, 20 years old to be the same size as my brothers. And so I had no choice but to be a little tough, because anytime that I didn't like what they were saying, and if I said anything that they didn't like, oh, I felt it. So we were playing football whether I had a ball in my hand or not. Those guys were the first offensive and offensive centers, linemen, everybody that you could think of. So my choice was easy. I had been playing football and didn't know I was playing football because those guys didn't play when it came down to me listening and doing what I was supposed to do. So playing football was something that I got an opportunity to do. I enjoyed. But I only played football because of my boys, because of all the friends that I had that played. These guys, they absolutely loved it. And it was just a casual thing for me. Things didn't change until I lost my parents. When I lost my parents, which I lost them 2 months apart, going into finishing my sophomore year and going into my, going into the junior year, they were not here anymore. And so it was a way that I could express myself. And it was almost like I fell in love with the game because of the way that I was able to really talk and allow the game to really, like, shape me. And yes. A lot of times people don't realize football it has a lot of synergy with life. You know, you're only as good as your last play. You hear that part. I remember like getting a game ball 1 week, and then coaches would be out there saying, "Oh, that was last week. What about this week?" You know, it's a "What have you done for me lately?" business. And once I started kind of applying it to the way my life was happening, everything in between those white lines, I saw that it was fair. And I could go out there and really make an impact on that play. And it didn't matter what I did the play before. It didn't matter what the next play would be. It only mattered that moment. And a lot of times that's what life is.
Brady James, kind enough to join us. And you turned such a devastating situation into a positive, and it helped you grow closer to your close Nick Saban, because He had lost his father. Now you developed a kinship with him, and your career flourished along with his as well.
Yeah, you know, one thing about Nick. So my father was a small guy, and mm-hmm. My dad was 5'9". My mom was 6 foot. I don't know how he pulled that off, but he did. and before that time, I never realized, I never even thought someone could come in and match the energy that my dad had. So I understood what that Napoleon complex was. Mm-hmm. And so when Nick walked in, the first time we met him, I said, oh man, this guy is just a shorter version of my father. Uh-huh. So he and I, when I talk about he and I not getting along, oh man, we had some tough times, and but we ended up finding, you know, I guess a synergy or something that was close to both of us, and it worked out. And he and I became it wasn't a coach. He became right. like someone that I related to, and that was the thing. That was the sale between he and I.
You bypassed the NFL draft after your junior year. Why'd you come back for one more year?
Well, I wanted to finish what I started.
There you go.
You know, I was taught to my family. I come from all her sisters, all my aunts were teachers, professors, and so even though my parents were gone, they wouldn't allow me to just skip my education. I mean, that was heard of, and so it was a tough decision, but it was a no-brainer, and I'm so thankful that I got that chance to do that, because that ended up being one of the toughest things that I had to do. At that particular time, we didn't have all those guys in the NFL at that particular time. You know, mm-hmm. the guys that we had were Booger, I would say Kevin Fault, Kenny Mixon, mm-hmm. Chuck Wiley. Those guys would be the guys that came back. And so it wasn't a lot of people that we had to really, you know, ask questions about, like, what do you think about the NFL, or what do you right. think about this? It's totally different now.
Yeah.
You know, it's totally different. And so my experience was just, I needed to finish. I wanted to come back, and it was tough, man. It was not the easiest thing. It was not. I don't think we were set up in a way that we are set up now with the academic center for mm-hmm. athletes. And it was something that I should, you know, I didn't have to do it. However, it prepared me for life after ball. So I'm glad I got a chance to finish it and get my degree.
You were an All-American as a senior. You were a National Scholar Athlete distinction as well. And then you leave. You get drafted by the Dallas Cowboys in the fourth round. You have a long playing career. But now, as you always said, football is here and now, but I got a big life after football, a lot more after football. What is Brady James up to these days?
Oh, man, all kind of different things. I am a serial entrepreneur. And I love the chase, and I love startups. I have started up several companies, and now just transitioning. A lot of things that I try to do is I love serving, and I have a heart to serve. So I love to, you know, give back to my community and help others out. So just without going into the weeds of all the things that I got going on, just know that I'm having fun doing my transition.
Well, you've got your Foundation 56 with your effort to eradicate the breast cancer disease that killed your mother. You've helped a lot of people. You've raised a lot of money. So I congratulate you on that. When you sum it all up, football was good for you. You were good for football, and LSU was good for you, and you were good for LSU. I guess kind of sums it all up.
You know, it's a win-win, and I am the for the native kid that's from Louisiana. I'm from Monroe, Louisiana. I grew up playing basketball in my backyard in a dirt pile. to play football right next door where it was an empty lot with all the kids in the neighborhood. So the thing that I would say is it became a win-win. And if I can do it for all the other guys that are out there that are willing to be creative and put forth the hard work, it could be done.
I got to get your thoughts. I mean, you're coming in on a really good weekend. The Gators are coming. Tigers are going to be ready. What are your thoughts?
You know, my thoughts, I'm still trying to learn how to watch this team. This is not a team that we have traditionally been used to. to watch Joe Burrow, like, tear it up. I'm so excited for him. I'm so excited for the players around. Again, we're used to the grind games, you know, 7-6 games, and now we're putting up points. And it's a big change because of the helmet and because of the colors. I'm like, what is this team? I see all the players, I see all the coaches. I hadn't seen this type of scheme, and it's so exciting. And it'll be a good test. You know, we want to see what we can do and what the Tigers can do. You know, this Florida team has almost been like a rival because on the East, because of how they played last year. And however, I think you know, we have a leg up, and you know, there's no place like Tiger Stadium, especially at night on a Saturday night.
You're the best. Congratulations, Hall of Fame inductee Brady James. It's come full circle. You deserve it. Congratulations. Enjoy every second of it.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. You take care. Brady James, tomorrow night, inducted into the LSU Hall of Fame. Hole number 11 on October 11. We'll talk to the Gators next. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Well, we're getting closer and closer to the big matchup Saturday night in Tiger Stadium between the Gators and the LSU Tigers. Nick Dellatore, kind enough to join us. He's the beat writer at Gator Country. He's right there in the swamp, getting ready to come on down to Death Valley. Nick, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I want to thank you and the state of Louisiana for this cold front that I'm coming into, because it's been an actual swamp here in Gainesville. So I'm bringing a hat and a jacket, and I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Are the Gators excited? Because I don't know why, but there's no love lost between these two.
Yeah, I was actually talking about that. Another beat writer is he's from Louisiana, and I think what Ed O is doing is smart, because he's given his team something to play for. Hey, play angry against these guys. But he's also giving all of Tiger Nation something to be mad about. So I mean, there's not enough gumbo in the state of Louisiana to soak up all the liquor that'll be happening at the tailgate before you get into the game for a 7 o'clock kick. So to me, it's going to be a crazy atmosphere. Florida hasn't really played into that. I know that there's no love lost, but they're kind of, you know, avoiding any bulletin board material. I think this rivalry used to be one that was on respect, like Florida-Tennessee, it's hatred, Florida-Georgia, it's hatred. I think Florida respected LSU, and that kind of changed that Hurricane Matthew year. I think that's when it started to take a turn the other way.
Yeah, that was – we don't like you guys, and you guys don't like our guys, and it makes for great drama and some great football. When you look at the matchup, everybody's talking about the great Florida defense and against the great LSU offense. What are your thoughts when you look at both of them? Share your intel there.
Yeah, Florida's been playing without their leading sack getter from last year, Jabari Zuniga. He'll be healthy, and he'll play for the first time. He got hurt against Kentucky, so the second game of the year, third game of the year on the first drive. He's been gone for a while. I've said it all week. I think Florida has, I don't know if I'm ready to say they're the best defense in the country, but I don't know what defense you would put up against them that would make me say, oh, yeah, you're right, Florida's second best then.
Okay.
They're really impressive. They get to the quarterback without blitzing, without bringing more than four. The secondary, you know, we always talk about who's DBU. The secondary's been playing great. They're the only team in the country with four players that have multiple interceptions. So I think the Florida defense is legit, and this will be their best test. Joe Burrow's the best quarterback they've faced since the last game. He didn't have a good game against Florida last year. Since then, he's been fantastic. So I think that's really going to be a great test for both teams. Joe Burrow has done a great job when under pressure this year, but I think this will be the best secondary he's faced, so that even when you're pressured, you might not have your easy check down. So I think it'll be a really good test for Joe Burrow. I'm interested to see this new look LSU offense in person.
Are the Gators better off with Trask at quarterback than they were with Felipe Franks?
The quarterbacks, Trask and Franks, are so similar. I think Felipe was probably a more eager runner than Trask is.
Okay.
They're both willing. I mean, neither of them are Johnny Manziel or Cam Newton. They're both willing to run. I think Felipe was more eager to run. And where you'll see Kyle hanging in the pocket and try to let a play develop a little bit longer, on the bad side of that is he's had a lot of fumble issues. There's a lot of stories that, you know, he hadn't started a game for 7 years because he wasn't a starter in high school and didn't start at Florida.
Right.
It takes time to develop that pocket awareness. And when somebody's coming, like, hey, I have to either run or get rid of the ball and not hold on to it. And he's had a lot of fumble issues. So, listen, if you're Florida, you need to try to neutralize Tiger Stadium as much as you can. That's not happening if your quarterback fumbles the ball three times. So that's a big issue. I think the offenses are kind of the same other than, you know, that one aspect.
Nick Dellatore, kind enough to join us. Everybody says that Florida can't run the football, but Pirine seems to be pretty darn good. How do you rate Florida with their offensive line and their run game?
Florida can't run the football. Pirine had 130 on double-digit carries, but 88 of those came on one run. They've really struggled to run the football. They only had one returning starter, the center, Nick Buchanan, from a year ago. At some point, you figure, okay, they'll figure it out. They'll get it together. They weren't running the ball very effectively versus Auburn until, you know, late in the game either. So I don't think they've figured it out. And Florida has to find ways, whether it's a swing pass or option, or they have to find ways to supplement the running game because they're not very good at running the ball between the tackles.
All right. I'm curious, Todd Grantham, he's a gambler, has been in his past as a defensive coordinator. Loves to send the house, but as you mentioned, they're not doing that right now. Do you think he goes back to his old ways? Do you think he tries to put even more pressure on Joe Burrow, or do you think he just stays pat with his four down linemen and just turns them loose?
I mean, Todd Grantham would blitz 13 if they'd let him put 13 on the field. But to me, I think if you can get the pressure that you're, you know, fine with four – well, then now I have seven guys in coverage, and that's, you know, instead of letting Joe Burrow pick off a zone defense or pick off, hey, but they only have man coverage single high, that's easy for him. One missed assignment, and it's a 60-yard touchdown. If you can get pressure with four and drop seven and make those lanes smaller for Burrow, I think that's what Florida will do. But, I mean, I know Todd Grantham has to be chomping at the bit to start sending eight. He's sent eight before, and I think he'll have some plays for that. But for the most part, if Florida's getting pressure with three and four, then he won't be bringing more because you want to, you know, force Burrow to have to throw into some tighter windows.
Boy, you look at last year, he blitzed an awful lot. He had 11 tackles for loss, five sacks, eight quarterback pressures, and you won by eight, 27-19. Coaches are creatures of habit, aren't they? But Burrow's a different beast, and he's got some more weapons in his arsenal now. And the Joe Brady, Steve Ensminger tandem, they look kind of like the New Orleans Saints out there offensively when they had Drew Brees. So it's just a fascinating matchup.
Yeah, Yeah, they're LSU's a different beast, and I think the offense, this is probably what Tiger fans have been screaming for and were beating down Les's door for. They've been exciting to watch. I mean, 54.6 points per game. Florida's only given up 57 all season. So to me, that's going to be the big test of the game. On top of Florida being able to handle the environment and handle Tiger Stadium, I think the biggest test of the game is LSU's offense versus Florida's defense. Something's got to give there because, you know, LSU, Florida's given up almost less or just a little bit more than LSU averages per game in six games. So something's got to give.
Right. And they're the two best teams in the red zone, in stopping teams and in scoring. LSU, the number one red zone offense. Florida, number one red zone defense. Something's got to give there. We don't talk much about special teams, but evaluate the Gators when they have to give the ball up or when they're returning a kick.
Florida's actually been very good. Their punter, Tommy Townsend, he didn't have a great week last week. He's very good. He's a guy that can flip the field, you know, even punting from his own 25. Can flip the field. He's liable to put out a 60-yard punt whenever. And Florida, what they've done under Dan Mullen is kind of what they did back when they had Urban Meyer. And it's special teams on the cover teams aren't just for the guys that aren't playing. Florida has three starting wide receivers that play on special teams, and they really compete to get special teams reps. So you have, you know, Van Jefferson and Tyree Cleveland running down the field on a punt. They get down there quick. So Florida's punt cover team has been really good. They haven't really been very explosive on kick return or punt return, but they have guys, you know, it's like if they made one person miss, it could have gone for six. So Florida's very sound on special teams. They start every practice with special teams. It's something that Dan Mullen emphasizes in his program. And I'm wondering, where's LSU's Australian punter? I felt like there was a pipeline for a while. And there's no Aussie punter this year. I don't even know what to think.
We've just gone with the Dutch Zach Van Rosenberg, who's about 28 years old, and he's pretty darn good. So I think the special teams are good for both clubs. It's just this is how healthy? Seriously, how healthy is Trask in your book? Have you seen him at practice?
Yeah, he. So when it happened, we all looked at it and thought, shoot, that's it. Awesome. He's done. That looked like, you know, ACL, PCL, MCL, it's all gone. The roar when he came jogging out of the locker room back to the sideline was unbelievable. And I think, you know, we were picking our jaws up in the press box wondering, like, how is he standing, let alone jogging back out on the field? Just a grade one MCL sprain for him. He did not practice on Monday, and that was a coach's decision. Practiced in full on Tuesday, practiced in full on Wednesday, and Florida hasn't practiced yet. They'll practice later tonight. But yeah, I think he's not going to be 100%. You know, not many players on the football field will be 100%, but he certainly won't with the sprain. He'll have a brace on his leg. Florida makes their quarterbacks wear braces on both knees during practice, and then it's just up to them if they're comfortable with it or not during the game. He'll wear it during the game for sure. If I had to put, you know, like a percentage on it, he's probably 80-85%. So, you know, not 100, but it's not going to affect him running the football when he needs to. Or I think it's his front leg, planting on that front leg and putting his weight into it to throw.
You ever been to a night game in Tiger Stadium?
No. So I think in 16, it might have been like a 4 p.m. kick or 3 p.m. local. And then it's been the CBS game the other two times I was there, so that's a 2:30 kick. So, like, a little bit, like, at the end of the fourth quarter, the sun finds its home in the westward sky, and I get a little bit of a feel of it. But, no, I'm really excited, and I'm really excited to get there and to see the atmosphere. I think LSU has great fans. I accidentally wore a purple shirt. You know, I'm supposed to be neutral in the media, and I wore a purple shirt my first time there. And everyone was very friendly, offering me food as I walked into the game. And I think it's a great fan base. And I cover baseball, too, so I've gotten to know a lot of the writers down there. And, I think it's a great rivalry, and I'm really looking forward to nighttime at Tiger Stadium in Death Valley.
You're supposed to be neutral, non-biased, so give me a score. Give me a prediction.
Yeah, I think, well, if I were a betting man, I would put money on Florida getting 13.5 points. I think that's too high. Okay. I'm a big believer in Florida's defense. It's going to be a really tough atmosphere, and if Florida, you know, if LSU wins the kick, Ed Orgeron is going to defer because you're not going to quiet down that stadium that's going crazy. Florida did the same thing. Right. I think Florida needs to withstand that initial adrenaline, that initial passion and emotion of the game. And if they can do that, I can see them winning the game. But it's also a situation where you fumble the ball and give LSU a 7-0 advantage on your first offensive drive. That can easily turn to 14-0, and then the place might crumble from how loud it is. So I think Florida needs to withstand that initial burst. I think they will. I think Florida wins a tight game. This will probably be LSU's lowest scoring game of the year. Florida's whole objective is going to limit how many offensive drives LSU has. So if you're used to getting 15, can you score on 6 of your 9 drives this game? And I think Florida's defense is good enough. Okay. If the offense can do that, the Florida's defense is good enough to stop LSU from scoring.
Safe travels. We'll see. Safe travels. Enjoy the time. Enjoy the festivities. You're in for a treat because they're going to be over 100,000. It's going to be a wild environment, my friend. But thank you so much for your time. We'll talk to you during baseball season. How about that?
That sounds great. Have a good one. Thanks for having me on.
All right. You too, buddy. Nick Delatorre, Gator Country. Tigers and the Gators. All right, we'll see. We'll see. You know, we can talk all we want, and the players got to make plays. And it's going to be a great environment. We'll see. We'll see. We always said, you know, this was there was the Texas game, and then there was going to be if you're going to arrest people, if they're hurt, if you're going to have suspensions, then's the time to have it. But it's funny how Sadiq Charles is back, and all these players are getting back healthy. This is the game that LSU has had circled. This is the one. What an environment it's going to be. Much more on this throughout the rest of the week. We'll take a time out here. We'll wrap up our number one. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, welcome back. You know, we talked about it all week long. The Gators from Florida are coming to Death Valley. First time in 3 years, and 103.7 The Game wants to send you there to help cheer the Tigers on to a victory. It's our Show Us Your Game contest. To win, go to 1037thegame.com, upload a photo of yourself and your favorite LSU gear for a chance to win a pair of tickets. They're hard to come by. Here's your chance. All you got to do is dress up, show up, upload the photo to 1037thegame.com. What are you waiting for? Show us your game. Welcome back. Numbers. This thing has been analyzed, psychoanalyzed, and let's just put it to you this way. 215 passes. LSU has used 5 blockers 165 times, 77%. That was their goal. 5 blockers, send people out on pass routes, and get rid of the ball quickly. They've given up 43 pressures. That's 26.1% of the time, and 6 sacks. Florida's defense. On 225 pass rushes, Florida has used 4 or fewer rushers 160 times. That's 71%. So they don't blitz very often. And with those 4 or fewer, they've generated 80 pressures. That's a 50% pressure rate and 14 sacks. Onus on the LSU offensive line. The Saints, meanwhile, interesting story. Teddy Two Gloves, Teddy Bridgewater. Doesn't drive a fancy Benz or a Macbah or a Ferrari. Teddy goes to home games on a two-wheeler, his bicycle. Yes, he rides the streets of New Orleans on his bicycle to the game and back home from the game. And he talked about it yesterday.
I had no idea that that was a big deal. But, I mean, if anyone wants to ride the bike with me, I'm open to it, you know. But I enjoyed my little ride to the stadium and from the stadium, and it's been a peaceful ride. So I'm open to people riding with me, though.
Oh, and you know they will. You know it's going to be a caravan of bicycles now heading to the Dome. Leonard Fournette is about to put one of the NFL's most underrated streaks to the test. Did you know the New Orleans Saints have not allowed a 100-yard rusher in 31 straight games, including the playoffs? So can the Saints continue and make it 32? If they do, great chance to win the ballgame. We talked about Zion Williamson and the Pels with a 127-125 win last night in Chicago. Zion with 29 points on 12 of 13 shooting. All of his shots were 3 feet and in. 3 feet and in. How about that? He knows his strength. He knows what to do. He knows how to do it. And he's getting it done. And here is Zion Williamson talking about the comeback last night in the house that Michael Jordan built.
They caught heat. Like, they were hitting threes, like, rapid fire. So it was just a matter of us, like, just coming together as a team and just trying to figure out what's wrong.
One player who's sure to garner minutes, he just keeps getting better and better and better, is another rookie, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who continues to deliver when given the opportunity. He is clamoring for minutes, you know, and last night, 19 minutes, he had 13 points, 7 assists. He just gets it done. Only one turnover. Zion talking about his fellow rookie.
It didn't surprise me at all. Like, I know Nickeil. I know what he can do. So, you know, I was happy he got to go out there and show the world he could do that.
Oh, by the way, the comeback, not that it matters anything, but the Pelicans held Chicago to 18 points in the fourth quarter. Pelicans got 41. 41. So, nice. Let me tell you what's coming up. Hour number two of the program, Hot Topics. John Hendricks from Canal Street Chronicles will join us. We'll talk about the Saints and the Jags. Can the Saints get another win on the road? What will be the keys to that one? And the Schwab will join us as we pick the winners of week 6 of the NFL. Don't even think about watching tonight. Watch the Astros tonight. Don't worry about the Patriots and the Giants. How bad is that? Sheesh, that's awful. Astros, Rays, that's good. All right, we'll be back. Hour number two straight ahead. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Why'd I do those things I did?
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Well, welcome. It's hour number two of two, and away we go on this Thursday, the 10th day of the 10th month of the 19th year of 2000. Closer and closer to the big matchup coming up in Tiger Stadium. Tough one on the Raging Cajuns last night. 21,000 strong showed up to Cajun Field, but App State just too good. They win it 17-7. Now we focus all our attention on our other two local teams, the LSU Tigers on Saturday, the New Orleans Saints on Sunday. Joe Burrow said it best. I don't like them very much. I know they don't like us very much. That's been kind of been the talk around here. Just have to keep your emotions in check with a game like this. Ke'Lavon Chaisson. We don't like each other. I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. It's just something that goes with the history of the program. Just two great teams, just bad blood colliding, and very passionate programs. It's something that's going to be exposed Saturday night. Can't wait. Can't wait to get our daily walk around the sports water cooler. So, CD, do your thing, big guy.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Producer extraordinaire Clint Domain joining us. Clint, a grad of UL, so you were at the game last night.
Yep.
Were you proud of the response, and were you proud of the effort?
I was proud of the effort that we saw from the Cajuns because, again, you just look at everything that happened over the course of the evening. Yes, the score doesn't indicate how bad it could have been because this could have been a mall-dragging and a half, and I have to say this, Jordy, all the credit to this game being 17-7 has to go to one man and one man only, and that is Reese Thomas Morstead Burns.
Punter.
The dude is just an absolute beast.
Yes.
He almost had, I think, four punts that would have pinned App State inside like the 10-yard line. You do that any given time, you could wind up probably controlling the fate of the game, and that was huge to see because I think if he wasn't necessarily on his A game, they would have had their fun because, trust me, that defense that I saw from the Cajuns, especially early on, they were allowing players to get wide open. But thankfully, the Cajuns did get things done and made this a highly competitive ball game. 70-7 loss. Overall, I'm pleased with what I saw. It shows that maybe we're just a couple steps away from hitting that next level.
Yeah. Wednesday nights are tough. 21,000 announced. What'd you think?
21,000, the announced attendance was that, and I feel like that was probably about as accurate as it could be. I liked what I saw, especially from the student section. The student section was in full effect on a Wednesday night. That was huge. I felt like it was on the hill, and I noticed there was a lot of gaps in there. But overall, I felt like it was a great crowd. Not necessarily as great as some of the crowds of the past, of course, but still a huge step in the right direction. Hopefully that can be sustained based off of the 17-7 performance. If it was a blowout, then I could see the thing dipping back down towards the average of the last couple seasons.
Yeah. It's such a double-edged sword. You got to get on TV, but a Wednesday night is tough. A lot of people with kids, families, all the things that are going on during a very busy work week. It's tough. A lot of people say, I'm just going to stay home and watch it on TV. I understand it. There's got to be a give and take. So I think 21,000, not bad at all. Not bad at all.
And you watch it on TV, right, Jordy?
I did.
What's all about Ryan Leaf on commentary?
I'm not a big fan, to be honest with you. But, hey, look, everybody, I have nothing against his past. I'm just listening to him as an analyst. I'm just not a big fan, but that's okay. Look, he did his thing. I thought the effort was good. I thought, App State's just the cream of the crop. They're the Alabama of the Sun Belt, and you gotta recruit better, and you gotta coach better, and you gotta get better. And until then, App State is the goal. That's what you're trying to become.
Exactly. App State is the big dog, and they were just impressive as all get out from start to finish. But we'll flip it on over, Jordy, to the thing everybody's been talking about, and that is the epic collapse of the Los Angeles Dodgers. You're putting your stud ace out there in Game 5 in the 7th inning. That just sounds like the most ridiculous thing ever. And then it comes back to bite them. And then not long after all the press conference and all the sound had been cut up, Jordy, I see that grand salami from the Nats. And I'm like, oof, that is definitely hurting a lot of Doyers fans out there, Jordy.
Yeah. Dave Roberts may not be the manager much longer. He's got a lot of explaining to do. And he didn't do much explaining, but he got completely outmanaged in that game, and the onus is on him.
Yep.
I don't know what he was thinking, why, Sometimes analytics work great during an 162 game regular season. Not in a short series.
Yep.
You got to go with what you got, and you got to be smart about it. Like my St. Louis Cardinals,
10 runs,
a 10 spot in the first inning. How about that?
That was amazing, and that was about to be where I was going to jump on next. Just looking at that Cards game, 10 runs in the first inning by itself. Have you ever seen that kind of like dominance in a game five from your boys?
No. No, I have not. But they got to the point that they're putting runs up on the board, and Cardinal management talked to the manager and said, look, we got this thing won. What if we sit our best pitcher who's got the ball for game five? Why don't we just sit him and save him for game one? And the manager goes, nah, he's already warmed up. He's good. I'm not going to play any tricks or anything. We're going to pitch him and go from there. But they actually had the conversation. I mean, we got the game one in the top of the first. We can sit our ace down, but they're going to go with Adam Wainwright in the opener. The Cardinals have home field advantage for the NLCS. Who would have thought that?
I don't think many people would have thought about that, Jordy. I know that the MLB had this kind of playoff bracket situation going, and it's safe to say several of them were busted last night. But it makes you wonder, Jordy, could we see the most like unusual World Series matchup potentially with the Rays and the Nats facing off for the whole enchilada?
Wow. God, I hope not.
That would be ridiculous.
That would be something that Major League Baseball and the networks would just cringe. They would cringe. They were so hoping for a New York Yankee, Los Angeles Dodger World Series. I'm just telling, that's what they were hoping for. I personally want to see the Cardinals and the Astros. Come on, let's do it.
Bring back that old NL rivalry. I love it, Jordy. I would pay money to see that these two teams face off in a best of seven series, to say the least. Definitely a lot of fun going forward. But man, it's just wild to see what's been happening in the MLB playoffs. Definitely a lot more juice to it this year than usual.
Yeah, but all the pressure's on the Astros tonight. So Garrett Cole, he's got to step up and deliver. Tampa Bay Rays are playing with house money. Nobody expected it to go this far. But again, they're at Minute Maid Park. But you know what? Time for the bats of the Astros to awaken, or this could be the shocker of shockers.
Oh, exactly. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens tonight, Jordy, with the Astros and the Rays. To me, I feel like the fact that it's going to be inside Minute Maid, that's absolutely huge and going to be a determining factor in who comes away with a dub here.
I hope the Astros win it, keep it alive. I think Astros, Yankees are what everybody was hoping for. They're the two best teams in the American League, but the National League is turned upside down. All right, thank you very much, Clint. There's your Hot Topics, brought to you by the best hot sauce on the planet, Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring some with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Saints, Jaguars, John Hendricks talks about it next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, we know it's a big weekend of college football, but on Sunday, the New Orleans Saints opening up as a one-point underdog will be taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville. John Hendricks, our good friend from Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles, and our Saints reporter joins us to give us his thoughts on the Hoodats as they travel on the road for the first of two back-to-back games, Jacksonville this Sunday at Chicago the next Sunday. John, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. The Saints certainly are doing great. What's been the most impressive thing to you about this ball club the past couple of weeks without Drew Brees and seem to be getting it done in a variety of ways?
Yeah, look, I think that's the biggest key that they're getting it done in a lot of ways right now. And Look, I think the defense stepping up to the plate is probably the best part of this. And, you know, look, the defense has been doing their thing, and they've been doing a really good job recently with things. And to get six sacks on Jameis Winston and have Marshawn Lattimore, we talked about it last week, and how important it was to put some clamps down, and he was going to have a lot to prove there. And so I think that's just one side of this coin. But, look, you look at what they were able to do offensively under Teddy Bridgewater. Look, man, once you got going, that's what you want to see is the fact that him and Michael Thomas with the chemistry. You've got some other players that get in. Jared Cook finally gets into the action. So, look, I mean, that all those spell obviously is a huge reason why they're 4-1 now, and we're able to beat the Buccaneers, who a lot of people thought were going to win this game.
Teddy Bridgewater, 314 yards, 4 touchdowns, just 1 interception, 26 of 34 against Tampa Bay. My goodness gracious, they seem to be opening up the playbook a little bit more to him. But man, Michael Thomas, it continues to amaze me. Everybody in the world knows they're going to give him the ball, and yet he still gets open and he still catches everything thrown his way. He's just remarkable.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's really good when you can get somebody like him, and just in the space he's in, right, and just earning his contract is a big thing that, you know, a lot of people have been talking about. So, you know, right now he's the number one wide receiver in the NFL, so in terms of receiving yardage, so that's obviously a huge credit to him. And again, last week it just kind of look at how the grand scheme of things, and that, you know, it's J.T. Barrett again. I'll bring that up, that he's the one that said, hey, lean on Michael Thomas. He said he's a guy who can really take over games and hit this another level. And, you know, look, what's his put up the game he did, that's just nothing but good things are going to come when you can get Michael Thomas in with him.
John Hendricks, kind enough to join us. Minshew mania. Gardner Minshew's taken over after Nick Foles got hurt. He's done remarkably, but he's leaning on. It's like LSU East. He hands the ball off to Leonard Fournette, or he throws the ball to DJ Chark, and they both stepped up their games considerably.
Yeah, look, Minshew mania is a real thing, right? I think it's anytime you can get a guy like that comes in and is able to do what he's done with the Jaguars, I mean, you know, it's a good feel-good story. And obviously, I don't want to say you got to battle the backups here in Jacksonville, but a very talented team defensively, offensively. You know, you saw what Christian McCaffrey was able to do against them with the Panthers last week. So I think the Saints can similarly attack with Alvin Kamara. And, you know, I think obviously you look at the track history between how they do against the run and not allowing a 100-yard ruster. I mean, Leonard Fournette, he's been able to break one, it seems like, every game. So that's going to be something to watch and obviously a focal point for the team. And, you know, DJ Chark against Marshawn Lattimore, presumably. But, again, you look at the entire matchups, and Eli Apple's playing a lot better. Von Bell's playing, making plays. Marcus Williams is making plays. So all of a sudden you get that, and then now, you know, yesterday Trey Hendrickson is limited in practice, so that's another boost to their pass rush potentially. Mm-hmm. Pretty scary thought, but, you know, I think it's going to come down to can we get some repeat consistent play from Teddy Bridgewater in the offense and, you know, just limit the big plays that Jaguars can throw at you.
We're going to find out. The owner of the Jaguars says that Jalen Ramsey will play Sunday, so that looks like Ramsey versus Michael Thomas. Boy, that's worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, those are two talented guys going at each other. Two guys that I'm sure respect each other. Obviously a lot to prove. I think Michael Thomas has shown that, you know, no matter what, he wants to go out there, be physical, and I wouldn't say bully people, but at the same time, you know, he's got a lot to prove here, and he's a guy who's just going to try to play every play 120%, and, you know, I don't blame him for that. So it's going to be interesting to see how he matches up against Ramsey, how maybe the Jaguars can get a little creative and try to disguise some looks. But, you know, ultimately I feel good about Michael Thomas against anybody because, you know, you look later down the schedule, you've got a tough Bears team, you got Richard Sherman in the mix, you got all these guys, and look, right now, the way Michael Thomas is playing, I'm going to take him 9 times out of 10, probably 90 times out of 100.
I'm with you. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicle. So when it comes down to this, the Saints have proven they can win on the road. Not a tougher place to play than Seattle, so they've done that. So the Saints are 3-0 against the spread in their last three games. So they're a point underdog in this thing. Why do you think they are?
You know, I think I've seen it a lot this week, right? It's a growing narrative. I guess some people are calling this a trap game, or this is going on or that's going on. I mean, there's a lot that's potentially in this matchup. But, again, you feel that the Saints, a lot of people are waiting for their luck to run out, I think, in a way, if you will. So I feel good about the matchup personally. But, again, you're looking at Jacksonville and home. It's a pretty decent, talented football team. And so I would expect them to put their best foot forward, and they're very well coached. And they got a lot to prove, so I still feel good about the Saints and their chances going into this one. I still feel like they're going to come out with a defensive effort that's going to help them win this one.
The defense has really been stout, no question about that. Christian McCaffrey went off against the Jags defense last week, so Alvin Kamara should be feeling pretty good, and the Saints should be feeling pretty good about giving him the ball and letting him go to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, look, I think they got Latavius Murray going a little bit. And, again, we talked about that as one of the keys for this offense is that, you know, again, Alvin Kamara, he's just something special. Every time he touches the football, he's able to do something that just leaves everybody like, man, I can't believe 61 other teams and 61 other times he got passed up in the draft and such. So, I mean, it's a credit to how he takes his work seriously and how the Saints are just able to feed him and rely on him, and just the different looks that Sean Payton's able to generate to free him up to. It's just something pretty special. So, look, I think Kamara's going to have a lot of opportunities for success on Sunday. At the same time, you know, again, we saw Jared Cook kind of emerge and kind of hit his stride a little bit, and I think this would be a good time for Latavius Murray to capitalize on that and kind of get him going a little bit for the Saints.
Do we need to give more credit to Dennis Allen and the job that he's done? And we always talk about the Saints and Sean Payton, but I've got to believe he's got some tricks up his sleeve now that he's got some tape on Gardner Minshew, who's, you know, the Washington State rookie, has got 1,279 passing yards, 9 touchdowns, just 1 pick thrown since he's taken over as a starter. So he's put up good numbers, but Dennis Allen's done a terrific job, and you mentioned it, Lattimore and Apple really playing good defense.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a reason why you're going to have Dennis Allen getting considered for some head coaching jobs at the end of this year if he keeps it up. I mean, it's just kind of what's going down, right, is he's able to generate so many different looks, whether it's the NASCAR package or blitz, whatever the case that he's able to dial up. I mean, he's just got to answer for a lot of things. And, you know, it's kind of rough but at first a little bit, if you will. But, again, you don't win the season in your first couple of weeks, and truly you hit your stride in the middle. And it's interesting to see what more they're going to generate in meetings for it going forward, because I think Jags are a team that can put a lot of points up on the board. Chicago, I don't know. It's their offense has kind of been flat, so I don't know what you're going to get out of them. But Dennis Allen, the work he's doing can't be ignored. One of the huge reasons why the Saints team's 4-1.
All right, the Saints are averaging 23 points a game on the season, 25.3 points over their last three games. So they've upped it a little bit. The defense has really taken control of things. Low-scoring game, what do you think? What do you think the outcome is?
You know, low scoring, I guess if I had to put a point total, I'm thinking something like 48, maybe a 24 to 20, 24 to 18, something like that. But again, it seems like it's hard to not take the Saints these days. Even if they are a 1 point underdog or whatever the case, I feel like they can come out there, make some plays early. They can hang in. It doesn't matter who they play on the road. I think that they'll be given a good opportunity. And I feel like they're going to have this game in hand entering the fourth quarter.
I'm with you. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles. Thank you so much for your time, man. Enjoy the rest of the week and have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Thanks so much.
Buddy, take care. That is John Hendricks, Ford Sports Canal Street Chronicles. Don't forget, if you want to test your football knowledge with Acadiana Sports Station, all you got to do is make sure to get your picks in for Week 6 at 1037thegame.com and try and beat the best with the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. Get your picks in, 1037thegame.com, and we'll see how it all comes out. Yes, indeed. All right, we'll take a timeout. The Schwab with his thoughts on Week 6 coming up next after this timeout here on the Jordy Helpert Show. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. Whether you need gas for your car, tobacco products, an excellent fast food, or a good bottle of beer or wine, ShopRite has you covered. For those on the go, getting breakfast or lunch at ShopRite is terrific. Heading out on a road trip, ShopRite has you covered with everything you need for everyone in your travel party. So if you're anywhere in central and southern Louisiana, you'll find a ShopRite store near you, a one-stop shop for whatever you need. If you can't ShopRite at ShopRite, you just can't ShopRite at all.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Well, every Thursday, we're thrilled to be joined by our NFL expert, Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, as we preview and mull over Week 6 of the NFL with some really, really nice matchups on hand. Frank, good afternoon, buddy. Thanks for the time. How are you?
Hey, what's going on?
I'm not watching Thursday night football. I could care less. I'm not going to watch the Giants and the Patriots. Patriots favored by 16.5. How ugly is that going to be?
I mean, it was going to be ugly regardless, and then the Giants had to rule out Barkley and Gallman, their top two running backs, their top receiver right now, Sterling Shepard, and probably their top pass catcher, tight end Evan Ingram. I don't know how they move the ball against the best defense in the NFL. I'd be impressed if they covered 16.5. There's not a lot to like about the Giants' chances tonight. I mean, it's one of those. Yeah, I mean, if you got to skip a Thursday night game to take the wife out to dinner or something, one of these, volunteer for this one, because this, if the Giants pull this off, I'd be beyond surprised.
Oh, unbelievable. All right, let's get to some good games. Maybe people aren't sold on this one, but it's a big division game. The Carolina Panthers are at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Carolina, Kyle Allen's led the Panthers as three straight wins since taking over for Cam Newton. The defense has been pretty darn good as well. Saints put a beat down on Tampa Bay, but can Jameis Winston and the Bucs outscore the Panthers and get a big win here?
Yeah, and this is one of the early London games. So, if nothing else, tune in to watch Christian McCaffrey. That guy, wow. I mean, I know that we don't give out MVPs after 5 weeks, but he's the guy. I mean, he's been so good this season. It's so impressive. He's unlike anybody else in the NFL, really. He's this 195, 205, but whatever he is, workhorse. He doesn't look like, you know, like he'd be the kind of, like, he doesn't look like Earl Campbell, let's put it that way, but he's... He's just an incredible player.
Right.
I like the Panthers in this game. They're playing really well. I think that, you know, there was something to, hey, switching out Cam Newton, injured Cam Newton for Kyle Allen actually helped the offense. I think they have a lot of weapons. The Tampa defense isn't that good. Jameis is always going to make mistakes. So I'm just leading Panthers here. I think it'll be a fun game. I think it'll be an entertaining one. I mean, you know, the London games are kind of mixed bag sometimes. We had a good one last week with the Raiders and Bears, and I think this one's going to be pretty good too.
Yeah. No question. Raiders with a big surprise in London, so we'll see what happens there. Seattle is at Cleveland. The Browns haven't come close to looking like a playoff team. Russell Wilson and the Seahawks have. They're at 4-1. Seahawks are going to be rested. They're coming off a Thursday night game. The Browns played a Monday night game. I don't know if that matters or not. You're the expert. You tell me. What happens Seattle at Cleveland?
You know, it's almost one of those that's it looks too easy. I mean, if we just saw Cleveland get embarrassed. They looked really bad 4 out of 5 games. Really bad. Yeah. I mean, they look good against the Ravens. Every other game has been, even the game against the Jets, okay, they struggled to put away a Jets team, but Luke Falk, a quarterback, that didn't impress me. So then you got the Seahawks, who have played pretty good. They haven't been the best road team through the years, but I don't know. It's hard not to pick the Seahawks, but it's almost too obvious. You know, it's like, how do you – it just seems like one of those NFL games where we're looking up and saying, yeah, of course, the team we all thought was going to win didn't win. I guess I'll pick the Seahawks, but I'm fully expecting to get surprised. I guess if you're trying to talk yourself into the Browns, their backs are against the wall. They really do need to get – they really can't, you know, keep giving away games. But I don't know what's going on with Baker Mayfield. He ain't the same guy this year. It's troubling. I don't think that a guy who threw 27 touchdowns as a rookie in like 13 starts, I don't think he's not a good player, but he's playing like he's not a good player. He just doesn't look right. So I don't know what to make of the Browns. I'll pick the Seahawks, but I'm fully expected to be like, you know, oh, wow, the Browns play the game of the year.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think Cleveland's going to go, okay, it's time to be Jekyll and not Hyde, and they're going to come out and play great. We'll see. We go from one, what could be a really fun game to watch, to another game that could be just really ugly to watch. We'll start with the good one. Should be a lot of points when the Texans travel to Kansas City just to see Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson play. That's price of admission worthy right there.
Oh, yeah. I just don't expect the Chiefs to lose 2 in a row, but I think the Texans can at least give them a push. I think this game's going to be really, really close. I'll pick Chiefs by, like, maybe a field goal or something. I think they're really beat up. They have some key injuries. You saw that on Sunday night. I think that the Texans – Deshaun Watson's great. He is so good. He's so fun. He has so many guys to throw to. I think DeAndre Hopkins is far overdue for a huge game. I think it's going to be the best game of the week, maybe the best game of the month. You know, I mean, it's just one of those where you can see a ton of points being scored, 2 great quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I don't know how healthy Patrick Mahomes is. He was limping pretty bad on Sunday night. I just don't have the conviction to pick the Texans, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if we look up and they're winning in the fourth quarter. This is like a Texans team that I don't think is great, but they got the quarterback. He's really, really good. It's a tough spot. It's a tough place to play, but they do have the kind of offense that can really put some pressure on you. I kind of like what I'm seeing out of Deshaun Watson. I think this is going to be a fun one. I think the Chiefs win, but it's going to be really, really close.
Mm-hmm. Over under 54.5. I don't make investments, Frank, but I'm taking the over.
It could very well be. Yeah, we could see both teams in the 30s. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, these are, again, if you were to try to make an argument that right here these are the two best quarterbacks in the NFL, okay, I don't necessarily disagree with that at all. I think that's a very fair argument to make.
All right, we go from the best game of the week to the two worst teams, Washington at Miami. I'm just going to talk about it because – I mean, they're so bad. Who's going to be the worst of the worst?
Yeah, it's amazing how we've almost forgotten how bad the Dolphins are. Though I see a lot of people like, oh, maybe the Dolphins can win this week. I don't know. Like, I know the Redskins are in bad shape, but the Dolphins. I don't think they're going to win. I mean, maybe they win one this year, but I think that the Redskins get, you know, they want to win too. They don't want to be stuck on zero forever. I think you're going to see the best you can get out of the Redskins. It's just because they, you know, new coach, new, you know, I mean, this team hasn't been very good.
Yeah.
But I think this is the kind of game that they can win because the Dolphins are just that bad. They're just a bad, bad football team. And not that the Washington's any good, but they're better than the Dolphins. So let me take the Redskins here in a game I hope not to see too much of.
Okay. Yeah, let's avoid that one at all costs. Seems like a big game. Maybe it is. Philadelphia is at Minnesota. Looks like Philly's found themselves. The Vikings, impressive against the Giants, but this is a different beast when you're taking on Philly.
Yeah, when you look at the Minnesota Vikings under Kirk Cousins, what do? They beat bad teams, they lose to good teams. They did beat the Eagles last year. That's probably their best win that they've had under Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
But I'm going to kind of ride with this whole thing that the Vikings can't beat good teams. I like the Eagles. You're right. I think they're playing better. I think they are fighting themselves a little bit. Give me the Eagles. Just because I need to see the Vikings beat some good teams. Like, they look great against the Giants. Okay, the Giants are bad. Like, that's the exact kind of team the Vikings always beat. I want them to beat a quality team, a conference champion contender type team. I just don't know. Until I see it, I'm just going to keep riding this kind of trend and just saying, hey, show me you can beat a good team, Minnesota, and then I'll pick you.
Yeah. We thought Houston and Kansas City was maybe the best game. This might be the real close second. San Francisco at the Los Angeles Rams. It's a statement opportunity for the 49ers. They're 4-0 and have been very impressed. Their defense was just outstanding. Their pass rush might be the best in the league going against Jared Goff, who struggled a little bit. This is an interesting one.
Really interesting game. We don't know if Todd Gurley is going to play now. He's banged up with a quad injury. Todd Gurley isn't what he once was, but he's still a good player. You don't want to be without him if you can avoid it. You know what? I'm just going to get crazy and take the 49ers. I'm kind of buying in. I think they're for real. There's nothing, I was on the fence, but when they were 3-0, I said, okay, well, you look and they beat the some mediocre teams and, Mason Rudolph at home and whatnot. And I don't know how good the 49ers are. They looked, as you pointed out, they looked fantastic on Monday night. I know the Browns have their issues, but the Browns still have a lot of talent. And to just boat race a team like that on Monday Night Football, it seemed like the 49ers could have, if they wanted to, they could have won that game by 49 points. They were just so dominant. They were clearly the best team. And the Browns aren't the Redskins or Bengals or Dolphins. I mean, it's still a quality NFL team, talent-wise. I think the 49ers are good. I don't know. It's tough to pick against the Rams at home, I guess, because they're good too. But I'm just going to kind of ride this thing and say I think the 49ers are legit. I think they're a little underrated. Even though they're 4-0, I think there's a lot of skepticism about them, and I don't think there should be skepticism. They can run the ball. They can rush the passer. Their quarterback is good enough. He's not been great, but he's been good enough. Yeah. And they can cover. And I think the Rams are in a little bit of trouble right here. I think that this is, at very least, it's going to be a close game, but why not? I'm going to take the 49ers to pull the upset.
I think it'd be great. Something's askew with the Rams this year. I don't know what it is, but anyway, let's go back to the black and blue division. Detroit at Green Bay. Lions are coming off a bye, so they'll be rested. But, boy, Green Bay looked really good against the Cowboys. They were the more physical team. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, I think until the Lions, really – they beat good teams. I don't want to say they haven't beat good teams, but I'm still skeptical. And maybe I'm not after they go in to beat the Packers, Lambeau, and hey, great. I'm going to take the Packers. I think the Packers kind of cruise here a little bit. I'm interested to see Devontae Adams plays. Their offensive, passing-wise isn't great without him. I don't think they have a ton at receiver if Devontae Adams sits, but I think definitely if he plays on the Packers, even if he doesn't, I'm going to remain a little skeptical about the Lions. I don't love what they have on their roster. They're better than they were last year, but I don't think they're great by any means. Give me the Packers. I think that's a good spot for them to kind of keep this role going and, remain the kind of favorite NFC South. They're NFC North, I'm sure.
Your Broncos won for the first time last week. They looked good on defense. The Titans looked terrible on offense and losing to the Bills. Von Miller introduces himself to Marcus Mariota. Did the Broncos make it two straight at home?
I think they do. I don't think the Broncos are that bad. We go back, and I know you can't do this, but whatever. If they don't get the roughing the passer call against the Bears, if they don't get the roughing the passer call against the Jaguars, or if either of those, those field goals missed at the last second, they were tough kicks. We're looking at it. Broncos team is 3-2 right now. They're not that bad. They're one of those rare teams where it's like, yeah, they're 1-4, but I just don't, they looked terrible in week one, but as it turns out, maybe the Raiders are okay. I'm kind of feeling the Broncos here. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're just one of those teams that's going to be, you know, everybody's written them off because their record, and that it's doubtful they're going to, like, jump back in the playoff race or anything, but I think they're going to be a pretty tough team to play. Tennessee, I have no idea what's going on with them. I don't know if they're good. I don't know if they're bad. I have no clue. Yeah. I'm just going to say that I think the Broncos are a little underrated. I think the Broncos get this done. I think that they're actually kind of one of those under-the-radar, semi-quality teams that just don't have a good record. They're not great by any means, but they can always win some games. They're not your typical 1-4 team. They're not your Atlanta Falcons. You know, they can actually win games. So give me the Broncos. I think they're going to get it done.
All right. The Saints are at Jacksonville. The Jags defense didn't look very good against Carolina. Christian McCaffrey just ran amok over them. Teddy Bridgewater had his best game as a pro in beating Tampa Bay. Saints on the road, they've proven they can win away from the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. They went up to Seattle and won that one. They've won three in a row without Drew Brees. Do they make it four straight?
You know, it's tough to pick against them. I might, but I am so impressed with what the Saints have done. I do power rankings every week. I talk about that a lot. I bumped them all the way up to number two, I believe I have them, because it's like at some point they're going to get Drew Brees back, and I think that this stretch with Teddy has been such a character-building kind of run for this team. They found different ways to win. I think they have confidence that, hey, Drew doesn't have to do it all. We can win with defense. We can win with special teams. We don't necessarily need Drew to be Superman to win these games. We win different ways. I'm very, very – like we said, you know, back when Drew got hurt, he said, okay, if he's out six games, 3-3, that's probably a challenge. But if he can get there, that's probably a good thing. Or 3-0. They've been really good. I think they're kind of due for a little bit of a letdown. I think they've just been playing so well. They played some quality teams, divisional rivals. Now they're kind of going on the road to play Jacksonville, and it's going to be hard to kind of get up for that game, I think. And Jacksonville needs it. And they haven't played great, but I think your quarterback has played pretty well. A lot depends on Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey fits are just a different defense. Yeah. He's an impact guy. Their defense looks different without him. It's understandable. If he plays, I definitely will take the Jaguars. If he doesn't, it's a little tougher. I might take the Saints. But I just think there's kind of a little bit of a letdown spot for the Saints, and it won't take anything away from what they've done. Already, if Drew does miss six games, this stretch has been a success. They've played so well against good teams, really mentally tough, really well coached. Been so impressed with the Saints. I hope Drew comes back 100% because I think this team can really be a quality contender in the NFL if he does.
The Jags owner said Jalen Ramsey will definitely play on Sunday. We'll see about that. Interesting to say the least. Should be a good one, but they may be overdue for a letdown. But I got to get one little cherry on top of the icing from you, because there's a pretty big football game going on Saturday in this part of the world, and there'll be about 102,000 people watching Florida come to Tiger Stadium on a Saturday night to play LSU. You follow the college game because you do a lot of scouting and all that stuff. So what do you think about this one?
I mean, it's hard to go against LSU right now, right? Your boys. I mean, they look fantastic. I don't know. Maybe we need your LSU against my Wisconsin in the college football playoff or something, because a couple of quality teams there. But I'm impressed. I'm really impressed with LSU. You know, they never lack for talent. I think that Florida's a good quality team too. You can't pick against LSU right now. They're really good. I mean, I don't know how the SEC is going to shake out, but it's going to be really, really fun to watch these next couple months. But, yeah, I'll take LSU, not just because I'm on with you, but I really believe that. I think LSU gets this done.
We got to get you down to this part of the world and let you come see a Saturday night game in Tiger Stadium.
I've never been. Yeah, it's one of those things.
Feed you real good, Frank. I'm telling you, you'll be sold. You'll be sold.
I've heard it's fantastic. I was up at Camp Randall Stadium last weekend. It's tough to beat that atmosphere up in Madison, but I'm sure that Death Valley is just unbelievable on Saturday night.
It's fun. Enjoy the weekend. It's got some good games. I hope you're wrong about my Saints. I hope you're right about my Tigers. So thank you as always, Frank.
Definitely.
All right, buddy. Take care. We'll talk next week. Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. Well, you know what? Peterbilt's reigned as America's premium quality heavy-duty truck manufacturer since the company's founding back in 1939. Peterbilt's maintained this enviable position as the class of the industry by concentrating on delivering high-performance, low-maintenance, and extremely durable vehicles that pay off in low operating costs, driver productivity, and high resale value. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. And you can find one, new, used. We lease them in Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and New Orleans. Peterbilt of Louisiana, the best of the best. Back to wrap things up here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, quick close here. It was on this day in history of sports on the 10th day of October, 1994, that the New York Giants retired number 56, not a more feared defender ever than LT, Lawrence Taylor. If today's your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share it with 45th birthday for Dale Earnhardt Jr. Happy 50th birthday to Brett Favre, Green Bay Packer. Yes, indeed. Special thanks to all of our guests. Inducted into the LSU Sports Hall of Fame tomorrow, Brady James, Nick Delatorre of talking about the Florida Gators, John Hendricks about the Saints, and Frank Schwab picking week 6 of the NFL. Tomorrow, it's a football Friday. We'll have the weather report from Chris Crozart, Nickel Report, Jordy and the Judge, George Faust will talk about high school football, Larry Holder about the Saints, and then the tripod back together again. We'll give you Monday's headlines on a Friday. It'll be a great day, great show. Plus, on this day in history, you don't want to miss it. It was a great one back in 1997, and it involves two teams that will collide on Saturday night. Can't wait. CD, thank you so much. Be sure to tune in tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.